What happens when you combine bongo drums, safe cracking, and quantum mechanics? You get Richard Feynman, a physicist so brilliant that Bill Gates called him the greatest teacher I never had, and so charismatic that his lectures still captivate millions on YouTube decades after his death. While Einstein became the face of genius, Feynman became its voice, translating the bizarre quantum world into something almost graspable. He didn't just solve physics problems that stumped the greatest minds of his generation, he did it with a Queen's accent and an infectious joy that made you believe anyone could understand the universe's deepest secrets. His revolutionary diagrams transformed how we visualize reality itself, and his influence ripples through everything from quantum computers to nanotechnology. But what made this Nobel laureate truly extraordinary wasn't just his brilliance. It was his insistence that understanding should be an adventure, not an ordeal. Growing up in Queens, young Richard would disappear into his room for hours, emerging only after solving whatever puzzle consumed him. His father, Melville, a uniform salesman with scientific dreams, never simply answered questions. He'd turn them around. Why do you think the ball falls back down? This wasn't evasion, it was training in real understanding. When his teacher introduced the principle of least action, the idea that objects choose paths, minimizing the difference between kinetic and potential energy, Richard was simultaneously fascinated and skeptical. How could a ball know which path to take? This principle would become the foundation of his greatest work. At MIT and Princeton, Feynman's questioning evolved into seeing problems from angles no one else considered. Despite his mother's objections, he married Arlene Greenbaum even as tuberculosis ravaged her, driving her to their ceremony in a borrowed station wagon outfitted with mattresses before taking her to a charity hospital. When she died on June 16, 1945, the bedside clock stopped at 9:21 p.m. For anyone else, this might have seemed mystical. Feynman concluded the nurse disturbed it while checking the time. This wasn't coldness, but intellectual integrity, the quality that made him a great physicist. Quantum mechanics operates by rules so bizarre that Feynman admitted, "I think I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics. Particles exist in multiple places simultaneously. An electron fired through two slits creates an interference pattern, like a wave, but only when unobserved. Watch which slit it passes through, and it behaves like a particle. Reality itself changes based on observation. The mathematics uses probability amplitudes that can be positive or negative. Actual probability comes from squaring their sum, allowing them to cancel through interference, explaining how a single electron interferes with itself by simultaneously exploring multiple paths. Einstein's relativity added complexity. Electrons exist surrounded by virtual particles, photons they constantly emit and reabsorb. Yet calculations beyond simple scenarios produced infinities. The theory worked brilliantly, but seemed mathematically broken. 6 weeks after Arlene's death, the atomic bomb fell on Hiroshima. At Los Alamos, Hans Bethe taught Feynman crucial discipline. Every calculation must connect to measurable numbers. Physics isn't just elegant mathematics, it's a conversation with reality. After the war, quantum electrodynamics produced nonsensical infinities for complex calculations. Then, Willis Lamb's 1947 measurement revealed a tiny discrepancy in hydrogen's energy levels, proving Dirac's theory wrong. The race was on to fix quantum mechanics. Feynman's breakthrough was radical. Positrons were electrons traveling backward in time. This insight simplified calculations enormously. He developed space-time diagrams, Feynman diagrams, that transformed quantum field theory from impenetrable equations into something visual. Using these methods, he calculated the electron self-energy, producing finite corrections matching experimental results like the Lamb shift perfectly. Convincing others proved harder. At the 1948 Pocono conference, Niels Bohr objected, claiming Feynman's approach contradicted quantum mechanics. Julian Schwinger solved the same problems using traditional mathematics. Freeman Dyson proved both methods were mathematically equivalent during a cross-country bus ride. The difference? Feynman's approach was far more practical. When physicist Murray Slotnick presented calculations that took 2 years, Feynman reproduced them in one evening. "That was the moment when I got my Nobel Prize," he later said. His diagrams didn't just solve problems, they changed how physicists visualized reality itself. After conquering quantum electrodynamics, Feynman moved to Caltech and tackled superfluidity, the bizarre behavior of liquid helium at extremely cold temperatures. Using his path integral methods, he explained how strongly interacting helium atoms could behave as free particles, enabling quantum effects at macroscopic scales. His insight that superfluid helium would form tiny vortex lines when rotated, like miniature tornadoes distributed throughout non-rotating fluid, was characteristically intuitive yet mathematically rigorous. At Caltech, he found an intellectual equal in Murray Gell-Mann, a polymath who mastered everything from physics to languages, while Feynman deliberately avoided learning things he could figure out himself. Their continuous arguments, what Gell-Mann called twisting the tail of the cosmos, proved immensely productive. When electron-proton collision data showed scaling behavior, Feynman realized electrons were bouncing off individual constituents he called partons. These turned out to be Gell-Mann's quarks, though Feynman stubbornly kept his own terminology. Their rivalry pushed both to greater heights. In 1959, Feynman delivered "There's Plenty of Room at the Bottom," envisioning atomic-level engineering, storing all human knowledge on a dust speck, manipulating individual atoms, building molecular machines. His colleagues thought he was joking. Decades later, we sequence genomes, build quantum computers, and store vast data microscopically. Between 1981 and 1985, Feynman proved classical computers fundamentally couldn't simulate quantum systems because quantum mechanics is mathematically richer. This led to a revolutionary concept, a computer whose fundamental bits were quantum objects. His 1985 paper developed a theoretical model for a universal quantum computer operating without energy dissipation. Quantum systems naturally explore infinite paths simultaneously, making them nature's perfect parallel processors. Though he died before seeing it realized, his work launched the quantum computing revolution. Feynman understood quantum mechanics' weirdness wasn't a limitation, it was a feature, enabling computational power beyond anything classical physics could achieve. When Richard Feynman died on February 15, 1988, physics lost a spirit of joyful curiosity. Days before cancer surgery, he spent an entire day solving an utterly obscure elastic theory problem, calling a colleague that evening, absolutely walking on air with the solution. In 1961, he revolutionized physics education by redesigning Caltech's introductory course. The resulting Feynman lectures on physics remain essential reading because they illuminate how physicists think. Feynman's legacy transcends his diagrams or calculations. It's his approach to understanding, his refusal to accept authority without evidence, his insistence on clarity over complexity, his ability to find profound joy in figuring things out. He once told a colleague, "You know, you and I are very lucky, because whatever else is going on, we've always got our physics." Feynman showed us that understanding is possible, that complexity can be untangled, that the universe, however strange, follows rules we can grasp. His message wasn't that you need to be a genius, but that curiosity, persistence, and intellectual honesty can take you remarkably far. Ask questions, dig deeper, find joy in the struggle to understand, because that's not just how you learn physics, it's how you truly live.